I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, probably going to be all over the place, but I'm definitely going to talk about Ozarks, the Netflix series Ozarks. Or is it Ozark? It's Ozark. Okay, so first things first. The weather has been interesting, to say the very least, over the Easter weekend into the first part of the week. Clearly, there are severe thunderstorms and activities all over the country, but specifically, there were, I have people in Louisiana and Monroe specifically, but there are other places too across, well, New Orleans too, mostly Shreveport, Monroe, New Orleans, actually mostly Shreveport and Monroe. Anyway, but yeah, so there's severe weather came through. Apparently a couple of tornadoes came through and really devastated a lot of the areas. But thank God none of my people were displaced. Well, some of my people's people were displaced, but they have lots of family around so that at the very least they can stay with other family members. So thank God for that. But if you Google Monroe, Louisiana, tornado, you will see the devastation that those things wrought. So we were doing the thing where we were texting, Facebook and all of that, just trying to get, a report on how everybody was doing. And we have this one matriarch of the family who is on all the social medias, all of them, all the emails, although she still does this weird thing where she's just like, Bae, get this to your mama and daddy. And I'm like, but girl, you emailed it to like 80,000 people. Don't none of them know the email, and you don't have mama email, you don't have daddy email neither. Or you don't have their social media, because I know you want everything. But anyway, so I just do my due diligence. I forward it on to mama. Or I do a screenshot and text it to daddy or something like that. But anyway, it was just cute how she like sprung into action and just being the family crier, I guess, and spreading all the news, just making sure we were up to date. So that was really nice. But, then there was severe weather over here in Baltimore, like severe, honey. And if you're not from the Maryland area, and many of you aren't, the weather here is funny, to say the very least. And baby, when I tell you it rains sometimes, it rains so hard sometimes that flooding is like a real thing, which you wouldn't think it would be a real thing in the city, but it's just because of the, I was about to say topography, but the land, because of the land here and the way things were developed, there are these beautiful houses that are in these valleys in the city. If you can, first off, everybody thinks that Baltimore is super urban, and it does have, it's definitely that, but it also has lots of, it's a suburban feel to it because of the way the city expanded. It initially was more so down by the harbor, and then it kept expanding as the people kept moving here and acquiring things. And so the city has expanded and expanded. And so a lot of the places where it currently floods are highly populated areas that at one point were the suburb. And I'm not, a city planner. So I don't know all the deets on, exactly why, certain areas flood more than others. But what I do know is that it's pretty clear that in some of these lowlands that we have in the city, right here in the city, I'm in the Northeast of the city. Anyway, a lot of the neighborhoods that we have here are in the Northeast specifically are kind of lowlands. Well, actually, ooh, this is a big problem too in the South, the Southeast for sure. But they're in these lowlands and it's really pretty on the best of conditions. But on the worst conditions, specifically when it's torrential rain, it has a tendency to flood. And I'm not talking about a little flood. Like in a perfect world, a little flooding happens everywhere. And, after it finishes raining, the water resides and you go back to your normal. But if the drainage system isn't working because it's backed up, because it's just been so much rain and there's really no place for it to go, And you're in a valley, not on top of a hill where the water could run anywhere else. It's flooding to the point where it will pick up a vehicle and move it type flooding. And that happens all over the city in parts because, again, in a lot of these populated areas, I think there maybe flooding wasn't an issue before. And of course, somebody's car alarm would be going off right now. Anyway, it's not so quiet. I think you know that by now. If you've been listening to this show for any length of time or any length of episodes, you know, it's not so quiet where I'm recording from. I don't have the best of equipment. I do all right, but I don't have the best of equipment. And anyway, I'm not recording in any soundproof rooms or anything like that. So it is what it is. But then I listen to other shows where it's clear that they're in New York City and they're not in some sound booth or they're in some noisy urban area. So y'all deal with it for them so you can deal with it for me. Anyway, but yeah, so long story short, Baltimore is no different than any other place where you just really wanted to put a bunch of houses and get a lot of people's money because it was a beautiful area without a thought to what that would mean for your property in inclement weather. And so anyway, there was flooding here and tornado warnings, like back to back. And I don't know, it's the season, I guess. But anyway, it's just like, I'm just thinking, it's like in Monroe, going back to Monroe right quick. It's like, actually, I think there were some tornadoes in Oklahoma too. Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, something like that. There might've been some over there. And I just think, in this time where we're social distancing and only trying to stay around family, it's like further complicates things, right? So not only, you know, people are getting cabin fever, they want to come out, but they don't want to come out too quickly from doing these practices that we're trying to do to keep safe. Because certainly, you know, while in some areas, especially in New York City, everybody has heard by now, especially if you're not from the United States, which some of you are listening and you're not from the United States, one of the things that you probably heard on national news or international news is that New York City has reached they've reached their peak of cases, meaning that they've seen the highest amount of cases in that they're going to see. And now it's just a question of per day is that answer. So if, you know, when it began, there were only 50 cases a day being accounted for. At their peak, there was like 350 cases or 450, something like that a day. And now they're not going to see that number of cases again. That's what folks are talking about, in case you were wondering. In my best understanding of how this thing works, when they're talking about peaks, that's what they're talking about. Not that there will not be any more cases. You're just not going to see so many cases in one day anymore, which means that the efforts to slow the spread of this thing are working. We're getting people treated. We're getting them using better practices to avoid the virus to the best of our ability. If they were come in contact with it, they're cleaning themselves and they're sanitizing themselves so that it can kill it, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, but that's my best estimation. So anyway, so we're hearing New York saying that they've hit their plateau or their peak in those cases. And I think Los Angeles said that they were hitting their peak too, which is mind-boggling because they had 16,000 cases in Los Angeles and New York have 14,000 at the height of this thing. And of course, it's not over. But both of those major metropolitan cities are considering restricting or lifting the restrictions on movement in the city, right? Baltimore, we're not there yet. Maryland, we're not there yet. I was just looking at, I was looking at a report the other day on Twitter where now we're getting more data in terms of who the people are who are contracting these cases, where they're from, and all of that. And in Baltimore, I don't know if y'all do this, but if you live in a certain zip code, like Baltimore has a number of different zip codes like any major city, right? And so instead of saying zip code this or zip code that, we say zone and then the last two numbers in the zip code. So zone 17, zone 20, it's the zip code is 212 and then the last two, right? That's the Baltimore zip codes. 21217, 21212 in parts, 21228 in parts, so on and so forth. If you look up the zip codes in the city, they all begin in 212 and then they end with whatever numbers, right? And so I was looking at the map and someone had illustrated, I believe it was Jane Miller from The Sun, a reporter from The Sun, who said that according to the data, not only are Black folk the largest number of folks who are contracting COVID-19, but in particular, there's this one zip code in the city that has the highest number of cases. And if I want to go back and check just to verify, but I believe that she mentioned either highest number of cases in the city or highest number of cases in the state. So like, if you look at a map, if you look at the chart for COVID-19 that the governor's office put out, I believe it was the governor's office, or maybe it was Hopkins University put out, the counties in the state with the highest number of cases in order are Montgomery County, which is around Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, which is around Washington, D.C., Baltimore County, which is surrounding Baltimore City, and then Baltimore City, which, cute little fun fact, Baltimore City is its own independent city, so it's its own county. Baltimore County is its own county with that is the jurisdiction of a bunch of different cities, if that makes any sense to you. So if a person says they're from the county, they're literally not from Baltimore. If they live in Baltimore County, they are not from, they're not in the city, they're not talking about the city. If they say they're from Baltimore City, then they will be in Baltimore City. They're two different places, Baltimore County and Baltimore City. Anyway, so again, the highest number of cases, Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Baltimore City, and Baltimore County. And of all of those cases, one of the things, and I think I've mentioned this before, that those four places that I mentioned are population dense, highly diverse communities, right? Lots of traveling. It's Maryland, right? We're Baltimore's a port city. Maryland, D.C. is a hub. So is Baltimore, BWI. It's a hub city. Like a lot of people, it's international travel. A lot of people travel from Baltimore internationally. A lot of people travel from D.C. All those airports internationally, of course they do. So it stands to reason that these would be the most populous places. Not populous, but the hardest hit places in the area. Now, even though I said DC, DC is not a part of Maryland. Obviously, they have a huge number of cases. And so anytime that if you've paid attention or if you've done any research, and maybe you haven't because you've been studying your own little place. One of the things that I've noticed is that when there have been decisions about restricting movement, Maryland, DC, and Virginia have walked in lockstep. Why? Because parts of Maryland, of course, DC, and parts of Virginia are like its own independent or entity, honestly. Simply because there's a lot of government business, a lot of nonprofit business, and just a lot of corporate international business that happens in the Maryland, Virginia, DC area. Now, why Baltimore is not in the DMV, Google that if you're not familiar. It's just, it stands to reason that a lot of people in the Baltimore area travel back and forth to DC. It's nothing. It's nothing. And a lot of people from the DC area travel up to Baltimore. Why? Because there's a lot of industries here. There's a lot of headquarters that are right here in Baltimore. So it stands to reason that we should all work together. These states and the DC district should all work together. And so anyway, so we're nowhere near, according to what I'm hearing from the latest press conferences that I'm hearing from the governor of Maryland, he's not confident that we're there yet. He thinks that we will likely hit our peak this week. And I don't know what that is. I guess I should pay more attention to that. But anyway, so I guess going back to when you throw in inclement weather. So like we're not in a place where we're ready in our area to limit or lift some of the social distancing restrictions, right? And so when you put inclement weather into the mix, and then you realize that if there was a tornado that had touched down in the Baltimore area, that people would have been displaced. Certainly, there are a few people that are without power that were without power for a short period of time. Just imagine the fear and anxiety that a person must be experiencing should they have to now leave their home because they're displaced from it. And go stay with someone else that they don't know, you know what I mean? That they don't know how they keep their own place. Do you know what I mean? Like, I imagine it'd be pretty nerve-wracking. So in the middle of all the inclement weather and trying to figure out how family is doing, of course, I'm still working because we found a way to move our programming online. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to keep it moving. So all of my Greek work is online. We have in Zoom meetings and things. All of my work is online. We're, you know, doing the same thing. And, you know, we're kind of moving business as usual. And once again, like I'd been saying for a couple of weeks now, just trying to make sure that I am well-informed enough about what's going on to help me and the hubby stay informed and then, you know, relay that info to my parents and our families and things. But then also just I need to be able to detach, right? Always got to detach. And the one silver lining that I can find in this is that I am so thankful that I've been introduced to better programming. I guess maybe I just haven't had the patience up until now to hunt for better programming, but I'm trying things out that I never considered watching before, like Real Housewives of Potomac. I have never been a Real Housewives type of gal. I've always been listening to podcasts talk about recap each episode type of person. I'm that sort of weirdo that I would rather listen to you talk about a show or a movie sometimes than actually watch it myself, because it's more fun when you're recounting it, because it's like I'm living through the joy and the heartbreak that you experience watching that thing, the disappointment or the just pure happiness that you got out of it. I don't know. That's weird, but I enjoy that. And so half the time when it comes to the Housewives and Love and Hip Hop. Yeah, it's like the Love and Hip Hop franchise and the Real Housewives franchise. I rarely do. And Mob Wives. Who is that? Yeah, Mob Wives. I would rather just watch or listen to the podcast, somebody's recap of it, especially if it's good. I don't always, there's a caveat to this. I don't always listen to the network supported version of the podcast because that's like cheating. You know what I'm saying? It's like you want the real on a person, but you go to their cousin or not their cousin, but their sister or something like that. They're biased. They're a little bit biased. You're going to get dirt, but you're not going to get the good stuff. You're not going to get unfiltered, unbiased opinions. So I tend to search for the ones that are not sponsored. And they tend to be more entertaining. And so there's this podcast called Hot and Bravoed, where apparently this duo, whose name I cannot remember, but it's Hot and Bravoed is the name of it. Anyway, they review all sorts of shows. Maybe it's three people. Anyway, they review a bunch of Bravo shows and talk about Andy Cohen and talk about Mona Scott Young and all the people who produce these shows. And anyway, at one point I was listening to them talk about Housewives of Potomac, and I think they were talking about the first season, and I can remember being intrigued because the way they talked about it was interesting. And it was somewhat in line with how I'd heard Crystal talk about it on The Read and Dustin talk about it on The Friend Zone. But different, because obviously The Read and The Friend Zone, those are black folk. And Hot and Bravoed, I believe they're not. I think the people that reviewed Housewives of Potomac are white, but they still reviewed it in a culturally sensitive way. Well, not sensitive, that sounds weird. But they still talked about some of the, I think they talked responsibly about some of the issues about race and ethnicity that came up in the series. Nevertheless, I had listened to those podcasts talk about those shows. And again, Hot and Bravo went episode by episode. And I was like, okay, well, I had my fill. Well, now here I am hunting for shows to give an opportunity to, just to see if my snobbery was worth it or was I all wrong? And so one of the shows that I recently began watching is Housewives of Potomac, first season. And I got to be honest with you, it is so hard for me as a person, and I'm saying this as a person coming from a sorority, which is filled with pomp and circumstance and dress codes and etiquette and things like that. It was still so hard for me to watch this, this show. And I'm thinking, are all the housewives franchise like this, where everybody is super bougie and stuck up and it's all about what you're wearing and it's all about petty arguments all the time, petty arguments. Now keep in mind, I'm quite sure that the editing had a lot to do with it. But is it always just meaningless, petty arguments about nothing and backpedaling and backbiting and a whole lot of talking out the side of your neck, saying, accusing somebody of being super racist, but you are racist yourself, or a colorist and you're colorist yourself, or do you know what I mean? Or you think you're better than everybody else. You're accusing someone else of feeling like they're better than everyone else. And then you turn right around and judge someone else. And the answer is yes. I think they're all like that, in different ways, obviously, because you have different casts, but this cast, it just felt like they were trying real hard to be relevant. In this first season, it absolutely did. I'm talking about everybody on the show, except for Robin, who I really felt for. Except for Robin, I felt like everybody was just trying to remain relevant. Giselle is hilarious. But I just think everybody on the show, for the most part, tried to seem relevant. There's this woman called Karen on the show. My goodness. It's like, I want to like Karen, but she's so mean. She's so mean. She's mean, y'all. She's very, very mean. Giselle's funny. Giselle just, she need a soda? I don't really know. Like, I like Giselle because she's funny, but like, she does a lot. And then there's this girl in there named Katie, and I'm like, oh, Katie, honey. I don't like Katie at all. I don't like Katie at all. And then there's, what's this girl? Ashley. She's been the whole season. And I'm gonna get to what I'm actually gonna talk about in a minute. But Ashley on Real Housewives of Potomac spends the whole season. And by the way, I'm watching Real Housewives of Potomac on Hulu. I'm not paying for it outside of paying for Hulu. And actually don't even pay for Hulu because it's a part of my package not Spotify. Is it Spotify? Hell, I think it is Spotify. So I'm not even paying for the show. I'm just watching it because I don't have Bravo on my regular TV or, you know, my cable package. Anyway, this woman on there called Katie. She is so, not Katie. I already talked about Katie and she's annoying. She's annoying, but she's... She's delusional, I think she is. And she and Giselle can't stand each other, I don't think. I didn't watch any of the reunions yet. I only watched the first 10 episodes. I did not watch the reunion. But, like, they don't see it for each other because I just think that they're too similar in their circumstance. And there's a whole lot of, I think there's a whole lot of not being okay in your own skin in there. A lot of self-esteem issues related to that in the show between Katie, Giselle, Robin to a certain extent, and definitely Ashley. But Ashley is, she's so weird to me. She's so weird to me. She's so opportunistic, but like, she doesn't even seize the opportunity appropriately. She doesn't even play the game well. Like, if you're trying to win these women over because you want to enhance your Rolodex, somebody says Rolodex, and I'm like, maybe it is Rolodex. Is it Rolodex? No. She said Rolodex, and it's Rolodex. That circular thing, my crew of a certain age who listens to the show, you know what I'm talking about. But everybody else, Google Rolodex, D-E-X. I think, I don't know how to spell it, but Rola, just Google will help you. Anyway, but like she keeps pronouncing Rolodex. She keeps mispronouncing Rolodex. She says it Rolodex. And she's like, she's trying to woo these clearly mature, sophisticated women. And she's like taking them to nag on whiskey joints and inviting them to her party, which is like a 20 something sort of party. And it's like a college type party. And I'm just like, girl, are you serious? Like, come on. Even when I was your age, like I knew you got to know your audience. And like, it's like she doesn't know her audience. And I recognize that some of this is just scripted. It's completely scripted. And some of this is just like, but girl, why would you agree to this script? Because you look like a dingbat right now. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't really get her. And then her husband is like almost, she's 26 and he's 50. She's 26. He's 55 at the time of the airing of the first season. Or at least the production, the recording of the first season. She's 26 and he's 55. Girl, if you with him for the money, I understand that. But you cannot be with him because y'all personally click. Because if you click with a 55-year-old and you 26, that man ain't grown. That person ain't grown. Like, honestly, and I stand firm. I don't care. I don't care how y'all feel about me. I don't care how you feel about the statement if you disagree. If you, a 26-year-old, has nothing in common with a 55-year-old except sex, I'm so serious. If it's physical attraction, just let it be that and let it be honest. But the life experience that a 55-year-old has is not the same as the life experience of a 26-year-old. And it isn't fair that a 26-year-old would not be able to experience and grow and make mistakes. You wouldn't be able to do that the same way if you weren't with someone who was your age than if you're with someone who's clearly not. And in fact, that man has kids that are a couple of years younger than her. And by a couple, I do mean two. And I'm like, ew. But it was clear that it seemed like a marriage of convenience. But she talks about him like she's super in love. And I'm like, okay, girl, well, you say all of that. And then you get cuts of you trying to help your mama because she has some financial issues that she needs taken care of, that she's been duped by folks and been wronged by folks. And it seems very much like, instead of you being madly in love with this man who just happens to have a lot of money, seems like you went for what you wanted. And the person that you wanted them for their wealth instead of who they are. And beside the fact, what in the heck does a 26-year-old have in common with a 55-year-old? Nothing. It shouldn't be nothing in common. And if you do have something in common with them, something wrong with that 55-year-old. That 55-year-old needs some support because you need friends and companions your own age, honey. That's the way this thing works. Like, even at the age that I am, I'm middle 30s. I honestly, like, if I were single, like, my husband is 2 years older than I am. I think that's fine. Like, it's 4 years. I'll give you even 5 or 6. I think that's still fine. But when you start getting into decades, that gets a little bit more complicated, I would say. I don't know that I would date someone who is mid 40s. I don't know. Maybe if they were fine, which that's not hard to do. Anyway, I don't know. I would be a little bit dubious about it. I would be dubious about it if somebody was a decade older than me. I know that that was a thing back in, you know, 20, 30 and on back years ago. Heck, we know that. I mean, look at Elvis Presley marrying a 14-year-old when he was 20, what? 24, 22, something like that. Anyway, which was not acceptable and never is acceptable. But you get my meaning. Like, there was more societal acceptance of older men, or age gaps between men and the man and the woman, not necessarily the woman and the man, meaning who's the older. Everybody talked about a woman who dated a younger man up until even recently. People have talked about women who dated older, younger men as cougars, and not in an affectionate way, but like a, ew, you gross way. Why are you trying to be his mom? But older men could totally be with a younger woman because that's male privilege. Anyway, I'm getting off track. My point is, I hate that couple. It's disgusting to me. Not disgusting, it's just loathsome to me, because she's awkward and he seems weird and I don't like it. Anyway, there are other couples there, like Robin and Juan Dixon. Like, flash forward, I know Juan Dixon coaches Coppin State Boys, which is, Coppin State is HBCU here in Baltimore, historically black college or university, here in Baltimore. And, you know, he's landed on his feet, but in this first season, they're having financial troubles. So I'm interested in Juan and Robin's story. I'm interested in learning more about Giselle than I get in this season. I don't learn much about her and I want to know more. I'm too busy learning. The show really focuses on Katie and her husband or her soon to be husband and the fact that she'd been chasing that man. Girl, she chased him the entire season. It felt like hollered at him to make him give her a ring. What? If you got to chase somebody down, I'm sounding really judgy right now. I am. I'm sounding very judgmental, and that's not what I'm meaning. I guess this is what I want to say. If you have to chase somebody to get them to commit to you, maybe they ain't the person that you ought to be committed to. Something to think about. Anyway, so that storyline was a thing the whole time. And then Karen, who is the matriarch of this whole group, following her and trying to take people under her wing and getting upset all the time. That was essentially her daggone storyline. And the fact that her baby girl was going off to college and she cried like everybody would cry when their baby went off to college. And there was a tender moments between the both of them, but it was clear that her daughter was like, "Ooh, get me out of here. I would like to go to college and live my life, please and thank you." Anyway, and there was is there another person that I'm missing? There was a couple of people floating in and out, but for most part, it's Karen, Robin, Giselle, Katie, and Ashley. I feel like there's one more person that I'm missing. But anyway, those were the ones that stood out to me. And I gotta say, I started and stopped so many episodes in this 10 episode series. It wasn't even funny. Like, I just had to walk away. And sometimes, you know, because I was watching the Hulu version or the ad version of the show on Hulu, I was able to get the breather sometimes in the middle of the episode. But like, it was so daggone petty and catty to me. Like, it wasn't even entertaining in points. It just seemed cringeworthy. There was a whole point where there was a whole conversation between two light-skinned black women hollering at two biracial black women. Well, I think both of them consider themselves to be biracial, about blackness. And one of the biracial women, Katie, considers herself to be biracial. I think Ashley, though she is biracial, I think she identifies as a black woman. Katie flat out calls Robin, because of the lightness of her skin, she says, you need to get your ancestry checked if you don't think that there are white people close in your family. You're denying it. And I think Katie was just angry at the time because she just doesn't like them and she doesn't like to be considered black. Like, and maybe that's real. Maybe that's totally her prerogative. If she wants to, it's clear that she enjoys and embraces Hebrew Jewish religion and the Jewish culture. And if she doesn't see blackness in Jewish culture, then it is what it is. Like, if she doesn't identify that, it is what it is. Now, what we know is that there are plenty black Jews that converted or that were born in North Africa, in the Mideast. It's like a thing, but I don't know that a lot of folks acknowledge that. And it also seems like she's kind of new to her faith. Like, even though she and her mother converted when she was a child, like, I don't think she kept, it's clear by the show that Katie didn't keep up with her faith. So I think she might have just some frustration about who she is. Maybe she doesn't truly know who she is. And so she seeks safety in other people who affirm in who they are. And I think that's okay, because I think it's honest. I just think I hated the conflict between her and Robin and Giselle about blackness, because I've shared before that my mother is super light. She's super light. Because her father, she's super light because her father was super light. Her father was biracial. And her mother was brown skin. And so mommy came out super light. And I think, you know, I think that the way, if you know anything about the African diaspora, first off, we come out so many different shades and colors. It's not even funny. We can have two black parents who had two black parents, meaning both of their parents were predominantly African-American, or at least they identified as African-American. And we come out all shapes and all different colors. Why? Because that's just the way our genes work, right? Even if both of your parents were brown skin, they could have a light-skinned baby because that's the way the genetics work, especially depending on genes, how that thing goes, and whose genes are stronger and where in the family line, right? That's how you get grandchildren coming out looking just like grandmama. Like, case in point, Drake's child looked just like his mama. Why is that? Genes. Like, you see a little bit of Drake in there, but you definitely see his mama, the boy's grandmother. You do. It is what it is. You see the boy's grandmother and a little bit of the boy's grandfather, which is Drake's daddy. But yeah, that's what it is, right? It's genes, it's genetics. That's how that thing works. You get somebody else's whole face two generations removed, right? There are pictures of me when I'm younger where I look just like my great, great, great grandmother. Couldn't tell you why. It just is what it is. But there are other pictures where I'm standing just next to my mother, and it looks like I took her face. I'm just in brown and she's in light brown. I'm in brown, she's in light brown. That's it. Right? And so it's just that conversation was so touchy to me because I know it hurts. And I shudder to have such a conversation be talked about so crudely on a reality show. Right? A housewives show. That annoyed my senses, I think. It offended me. But nevertheless, it's something that it was good that we talked about it, because what other housewives show apart from Atlanta that would even come close? And to be honest with you, I don't even think Atlanta talks about it. And I feel like there are huge whole episodes that can be done talking about the complexities of colorism in the black community, colorism just in any community of color, right? Because we know it exists. We have, when I was in college, I can remember, and I think I had a whole episode about this. I think it was called Colors. Year ago, 2 years ago, something like that. Look it up if you care. But anyway, I was in college, and I can remember talking about colorism, explaining what colorism was to my class. And I can remember this Chinese American student who was like, oh, yeah, it's like a thing in China where that one of the reasons why you see a lot of the students who are coming from an Asian country walking around the campus, even when it's really hot, with a parasol on or with long sleeves, is because they want to appear as light as possible. I think her terminology was fair. They want to keep their skin as white and fair as possible, because if you're dark, it's kind of akin to you being poor and you having to work. And so the lighter your skin is, the more attractive you appear, because the more wealthy you appear, and the darker you are, the less attractive and less wealthy you are, or the less wealthy you appear. And I thought that was so fascinating, because up until that point, I only thought colorism was in the black community. I had no idea that it was in communities of color. And then I grew up and I started to realize that in the South Asian community, well, it's Asian. We say South Asian in the United States East Indian. And I don't know why that is. Maybe we're just not comfortable saying Asian. But in the Asian diaspora, which includes India, we know that colorism exists. We see bleaching creams all the time. In Korea and India, of course, the African diaspora, all of these communities of colors, there are huge conversations, important conversations that need to continue to be had about colorism and our proximity to light-skinnedness, which is also, if you want to go there, it's akin to our proximity to whiteness as a beauty standard. And anyway, so there's an important conversation to be had about this. It's just, in a Real Housewives show. But then, yes, in a Real Housewives show, because it garners a lot of attention. And to the point where you look and I'm listening to Hot and Bravo and you have these two white folks talking about this very important topic with in a way that's very interesting and very respectful. And I guess it's just opened my eyes to the fact that, oh, yeah, so like everybody should be talking about this. It's important because if we can identify the problem, we can begin to work on it. Now, will we see the solution anytime? I don't know. But it's good that we're talking about it. So anyway, so the season as a whole, and I'm talking about it now because I just don't know that I'm ever going to talk about it again. Because will I watch the reunion? I don't know. Will I watch season 2 or 3? I don't know. Because I kind of do want to see that there was supposed to be a fight that happened and there was also supposed to be a groping incident that happened. Anyway, I don't know. Anyway, so, but yeah, there was a booty grabbing incident between Ashley's husband and Karen's boyfriend at the time, where I think Ashley's husband, Michael Darby, grabbed Katie's boyfriend's butt on the dance floor. And that was like foreshadowing, I guess, because then flash forward to what, season 3 or season 4, and there's this dun 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 booty grabbing or private parts grabbing gate that comes up with it. So I don't know. I may just skip a bunch of seasons and go to the juice, because at the end of the day, I want to be entertained in a way that is not meaningful. That sounds stupid, but you get what I mean. Like, maybe I'll just skip to the juice. But anyway, so I watched that and I got mad, and then I was entertained, and then I got mad again. And while I was watching that, I started watching Ozark, which I had avoided this for the 3 years. I've avoided watching it because I'm like, I'm from Missouri. I know all about the Ozarks. I keep saying Ozarks because that's what we call it. We call it Ozarks. I don't know if the show is called Ozark, and I should know this at this point. Hold on, let me look so that I can get myself together because I got someplace to go. Okay, it's called Ozark, but we call it Ozarks because it's like a part of it's like a hilly, mountainous, it's like foothill sort of chain, and I can't remember the mountain chain is a part of. For some reason, I grew up thinking it was a part of the Appalachian mountain chain, but I know that's not true. It's more so like little foothills that I don't even think it's a part of any mountain chain. It's just a bunch of foothills that could be up like the little baby mountains, but they're not. Anyway, there are these huge caverns and valleys and cliffs and all of that stuff. It's very mountainous in the area. A bunch of slate, because I think that's what I grew up hearing, that Missouri was essentially slate, where that's the rock formations that are in and around the state. And so we call it the Ozarks because it's a bunch of different resorts, a bunch of different things that you can do down there. So we just call it the Ozarks with an S on the end instead of Ozark. Anyhow, so I grew up going down there, Branson and all of that stuff and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm just like, I'm not watching that. So I could see a bunch of hillbillies and stuff and people acting stupid and ooh, this is what real country is like. I don't want to watch that. I grew up seeing that. Why I want to see it on TV? Anyway, so I'm just like, I'm not into it. But I don't even know what made me start watching it apart from, I think, Jason Bateman. Just seeing him as a straight man again. Not in a funny role, but like, how can I put it? When I'm talking about straight man, I'm talking about the comedy, understanding of the term. So there's someone who's like super funny and the other person is just like along for the ride and they're not laughing so much because they're just like, this is bizarro. And they usually set up the jokes or they make the jokes funnier because they're the ones that are doing a lot of the work to get the joke to be funny, right? So Jason Bateman in what is that show? There's this show that he was a part of. It was a big family and they were so dysfunctional, but he was a straight man. So he wasn't making the jokes everybody else was. And he was just like a regular person, just like reacting. And I forgot the name of that show, but anyway, he was hilarious. Portia De Laurenti, wait, Portia? Ellen's wife was in it, and some other people too. Anyway, so I was intrigued because Jason Bateman, and I wanted to see what it was about. I was just going to give it one episode. And boy, when I watched that one episode, I said, well, okay, I guess I'll watch another and another and another. And I kept moving on. I kept watching it. And it's heavy. It gets heavy real quick. And it's just like a series of calamities. It's just one thing after another. And you're like, how much can this person take? And then it also does this weird thing where there's not but a handful of people of color in this whole thing. And of course, the villains in the show are the main villains are people of color and poor rednecks, which is a whole commentary that maybe I'll get into, maybe I won't, but it's interesting to me. And very elitist. It starts off very elitist, like nose up in the air about their predicament, but then you start to think, well, who is the one who should have their nose up in the air? Look what y'all doing. Who should be high and mighty right about now? There's a lot of that going on in the show. But anyway, it's a good show. I've watched the first season and I'm intrigued. And so I'm going to talk about it. Okay, so I'm going to be a little unconventional how I talk about this. I may talk about finer points of the show. I may talk about details. The season itself, season one, I just watched season one of Ozark. There are only three seasons available. So I just was able to get through season one and it was awesome. So I will just kind of talk around it. I do think you should watch it. I absolutely do think you should watch it. That said, I have quibbles. Being from Missouri myself, I have quibbles. And I don't even think they're small. It's legit. So let me just run into it. So couple things. So you know it stars Jason Bateman, which I already said, Laura Linney, and then something Yulin. Shoot, I forgot his last name. I forgot the dude's name, but like he's awesome. And he's a perfect straight man too. Hold on, no, I have to get this actor's name. I have to pull this real quick and I should have done this. I had it in my head, but I've been calling him Rip Torn. Rip Torn is a completely different actor, a completely different old white man that I believe passed away. This guy isn't it. So hold on, let me get the deets right quick because I really like this character. And I'll tell you who, oh, Harris Yulin. Harris Yulin is another lead character. And there are other leads in here, but I won't go into it because I really want to focus on those three. Obviously, Jason Bateman, the premise of the show is Jason Bateman is this Chicago financier whiz, accountant whiz, who is just really smart. And he goes into business with his best friend and they manage folks' money. But you learn real quick that they are laundering money for other organizations. And the other organization specifically in this instance is the Mexican drug cartel. It's very specific, Mexican drug cartel. And we don't know where they're from. And we never learn where they're from other than the country of Mexico. And you're beginning to hear more of my frustrations with the show. But anyway, So they're laundering money and real quick things go south because it's very clear that Jason Bateman's, shoot, I forgot his character's name and it don't matter because you can Google it. Anyway, Jason Bateman's partner, who's also his best friend, it's very clear real quick that due to an incident that happens that his friend and some other business associates of them that have been helping launder money and smuggle drugs into Chicago for the cartel, this particular cartel, have been embezzling money. And so things go south, blood and guts, and then flash forward. they end up in the Ozarks because the laundering scheme in Chicago is finished, right? And the FBI and the ATF and all of them are on there, on the cartel's tail. And so, because, long story short, Jason Bateman's business associate, of course, is killed. Because you can't run afoul to the cartel, right? So anyway, but long story short, Jason Bateman talks his way out of being killed himself by their cartel handler, by suggesting that, you know, I've been planning to move my family to this little resort area in Missouri, in southern Missouri, where there's so much shoreline, more shoreline than California combined, all of California and most of the West Coast or whatever. And so we can do a lot of stuff like down there. It's just ripe for the taking. I was going to go down there anyway and move our businesses down there anyway. So let's just take your laundering operation and move it down there. We can do a bunch of stuff. And so on the strength of that bogus, oh, you clearly know in this, and this all happens in the first episode of PS, you clearly know that Jason Bateman is just talking outside of his neck, but he's trying to save his life. Even his cartel handler recognizes that he's talking out the side of his neck, but the cartel handler needs a new laundering operation. Like, it's not going to cut it that he's punished these people. He also needs someone who's good with money, who can help him launder the stuff that he's getting. And I can't remember if I explained this in the intro or not. But Google money laundering, it's just taking money that from ill-gotten gains. Like, you know, you stole $100,000. Okay, well, you can't just put $100,000 in your bank and expect the government or nobody to be tipped off. So you put it into something else and then slowly over time take that $100,000 out. And that $100,000 is now clean because it actually came from something legitimate that you were doing, right? That's essentially what laundering is. Taking bad money and making it good money by putting it in, taking that money that you got from bad deeds or illegal means, and putting it through something less legit, like a business or a building or, you know, philanthropy or something like that. Anyway, so that's what washers do. They find a way to two things. They find a way to make your money come back out clean, proverbially, because it's now from a legitimate business that you can trace. And then two, what we learn in the show is that they literally wash your money. So, you know, if the money that you've gotten is a bunch of bills and they're super crisp, they literally put it in, like, they crinkle it up to make it look old, to make it the money look like it's been in rotation for a while. You know what I mean? Again, all to kind of cover up the ruse that you stole all this, right? Anyway, so that's what Jason Bateman and his colleague were doing, his friend were doing, and that's why they got caught. And so anyway, the Jason Bateman convinces his cartel handler to allow them to go to the Ozarks, uproot the whole family and go to the Ozarks and take the cartel operation that away to the Ozarks. And there's another subline in here where Jason Bateman's marriage between Laura Linney is falling apart, and she has been cheating on him, and he's hired an investigative a private eye to look into her and catch her in the act. I guess I'm not really sure. The show really never, throughout the whole season, you never understand if he was going to do anything with the evidence that he found. And certainly the private investigator got hard evidence, and I'm not trying to be gross about it, but he got direct evidence that she was totally cheating, and with whom, and it was clear that it was her, and it was clear that it was the other guy. Who the other guy was, and the other guy was not Jason Bateman. Or Jason Bateman's character, Laura Linney's character. Duh, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, So anyway, so not only is this, has this traumatic thing happened where his best friend and his best friend's girlfriend were murdered and their other business associates were murdered, but now his life is on the line. He's freaking scared. His family is being watched and could be killed, and his marriage is falling apart, right? So in the midst of all that, they move, they uproot the family, and she's a good sport. Laura Linney, her character, like she's G for it. Like she's not G for it, but like she moves like a pro, right? Like she's like, okay, this is what we doing. In the middle of all that. And so they move to the Ozarks, and then, you know, there's a whole storyline where a calamity, oh my goodness, a series of unfortunate events happens in this thing. It's really dark. It's like a doggone roller coaster. Lots of emotion. There's a point where everything is cool, and then there's lots and lots and lots of killing. Obviously, there are newer characters introduced. There's an interesting way where they introduce young people who are essentially groomed to be criminals. And they talk about that storyline in a way that I don't think we've ever heard before, or certainly I've never seen before, that someone who's young could actually be like, do some gangster criminal stuff, right? Like we've seen young people, and I'm talking like teenagers and whatnot, like pull triggers and whatnot in movies and shows, but I don't think we've ever seen teenagers be like calculating the way that some of these characters are, or at least one in particular is set up to be in this show, and vulnerable too, because still trying to impress family members and stuff. But I think I've only read devious, diabolical characters, teenage characters, in books. I haven't really seen that in movies, unless it was a fictional depiction or a movie, a cinematic depiction of something that happened in real life. Do you know what I mean? So the characters here are very interesting, to say the very least. And the other thing that I'll share before I just start talking generally about the show and my frustrations with it is that obviously this show would not be any good if Jason Bateman, Laura Linney moved their entire family to the Ozarks and were able to successfully launder the money without any issues, right? Duh, that's not what happened. So not only do they move to the Ozarks and find that it's not going to be as easy as possible, because quite frankly, it's a small, sleepy community that they trust. A lot of vacationers and out-of-towners come in for a specific period of time and then they're gone. And so even though they come right when the out-of-towner season begins, they're still they're setting up root, and people are kind of looking at them. They look kind of funny in the light, if that makes any sense. They do stand out. They do stick out. And they adapt pretty quickly, especially Laura Linney, her character. Like, she adapts like a doggone pro. Like, she has ties to the political world, and a part of her character's backstory is that she was a part of the Obama campaign, which, Lord Jesus, oh my gosh, if I never hear, like, anyway, I'll get into that in a second. But anyway, so she's a political, not an aide, but somebody who's really smart and does a lot of work on in getting people elected, getting bills passed, getting them put up on the floor for a vote in the first place in both House and Senate and stuff like that. Like, you give the sense that before she had kids, she had a very strong political career, but that once she had kids, she had to make a choice between her career and her kids, which I'm sure that actually in the political world, I still believe that. I still believe that sort of an industry would make you, if you are not a candidate. Candidates don't have to choose because it's perceived. I actually know, I'm talking really fast. I actually know some representatives, one in particular in Baltimore, who while she was running, she was pregnant. While she was running for office, she was pregnant. At one point I was toying with the idea of what would it take for me to run for an office here in Baltimore. A council, not representative or anything like that. My goodness, I don't have the stomach for it. Turns out I also don't have the stomach for city council either, because I thought there was more power. I thought basically and I'm detouring like a mug, but Laura Linney's character got me talking about politics. Anyway, so long story short, and I don't even know if I've ever shared this on the show before, but how council folks work here, I don't know how it works where you are. And I don't know what the equivalent is in your township, in your country, where you are. But city council people here are essentially folks that represent zip codes in the city, right? Or a series of zip codes or a collection of neighborhoods, right? And here, the power that city council folk have is in the land that is in their territory and what to do with that land. So they have direct control over who builds what, who's charged what, not charged what, but like who comes where. And that can has a lot of impact in terms of economics. You can take a wild guess. If you control land more than you control anything, and you also take a lot of constituent calls and stuff like that, which is what I thought, I guess I thought the role was going to be different than controlling, boiling down to controlling who develops what in your area. But that's essentially what she told me, the reason why she didn't run for city council. And she ran for, representative of her district instead, was because she wanted to do more good. And I'm just telling you what she told me. I'm just telling you what she told me. If you are in the Baltimore area, I think our city council folk, our elected officials are important, but I'm just telling you what a representative told me, that she peeped the game and decided that game wasn't for her and she wanted to do something else. And so that's what turned me completely off from running for city council as well, because I have no desires to be president of the city council. I have no desires to be mayor. Anyway, I was intrigued by her character because it felt like throughout toward the end of season one, what I would say is that we get to see more of Laura Linney's character and get really see her move and shake. Now there has a lot has happened, but by the time we get to, I think it's like we start to see her like really move and shake politically and use her power and her skills. And it's a 10 episode season, season one of Ozark is. And we get to see her move and shake, I think beginning in episode 7 or 8, which is not a whole lot of time to hear about her, but that gave me a good amount to really move with, right? They gave me a good amount to start moving with. And then what I know is I've already begun watching season 2. And so I know that we get more into Laura Linney's character's backstory, or not backstory, but like we really get into seeing her move and shake and use her political skills to do that, or skills in the political world to like really make things happen. So anyway, so the season itself begins and ends just as spectacularly, similarly, right? Lots of gore, lots of death, but at the same time, really intriguing stories. You really feel for Jason Bateman's character, even though you know he's hurt because of his wife. He feels powerless. At the same time, this dude is ruthless. And he's not actually pulling any triggers. He's not actually taking anyone's lives. But this dude is conniving. And you get the sense that if he did have to get his hands dirty and like really, I mean, he's getting his hands dirty because he's laundering money. Let's be clear. Like he's doing dirty things. But if he really needed to get in there and dig deep and do something just awful, you get the sense that he would do it, because throughout the season, he disposes of what? 2 bodies? 2, 3? Knows of countless others who've been disposed, but he specifically was a part of disposing of 2, right? His character. So you get the sense that he's doing what he got. He's doing what he has to do to survive. But there's a piece of this that you feel like he's becoming numb to the point of, this is the cost of doing business. I need to protect my family. So this is what I'm justifying in order to protect my family. So overall, I think the show itself and the subject matter is really, really great, but I just cannot get over, and I talk about this all the time in the shows that I watch, I cannot get over the fact that they literally, the only brown people you see are bad guys. The only brown people you see are bad guys. You do not see any brown people, or even the one brown person you see is an agent. He's set up as weak and out of control, but not more out of control than his agent friend. There's another storyline where there's an FBI agent who I guess what we didn't know, what we soon come to find out, is that Jason Bateman's best friend, who was murdered, was an informant for the FBI. And so now the FBI, who his FBI handler, now needs to find someone else to be his informant. And so he was now he begins to target Jason Bateman, right? And so there's this whole storyline where he's gay and he's out of control. And his partner at one time, they allude to the fact that they were lovers at one point. And his partner has very beautiful skin. I mean, clear. Just clear. Everybody else kind of looks gross. And I don't mean this in a terrible way. What I mean to say is the lighting of the show is dank and dingy, right? It's like a blue tint to it. So people don't look their best, even when they're putting on the Ritz. Who says that? Even when they're putting the shine on and getting real cute and spiffy looking, they still look like... I'm going to say something mean. They don't look their best. Anyway, so except for this man, and I don't know if I just happen to really appreciate his complexion, but his skin routine, his skin regimen is everything, and we ought to all take notes and get it, because even in this dank, dingy, nasty light, he looks scrumptious. Anyway, but nevertheless, everybody else just kind of looks like... Anyway, I've talked about that. Anyway, they don't look their best. Anyhow, so, but like, he is the one character, the one brown character that isn't terrible, but like, he appears to be weak, and it's just awful, because I'm like, again, they try to humanize Jason Bateman's cartel handler by showing you his wife, and you know they're talking and everything like that. There's a point where Laura Linney, Jason Bateman, and Jason Bateman's best friend at the time when he was still alive, and the cartel handler and the cartel handler's wife all sit down and have dinner. And so there's this humanizing moment, but you don't forget that this dude is still a cartel. He's still connected to the cartel. He's not the boss, but he's the handler for this operation. He oversees this particular operation. And so it boggles my mind, because a couple things. So there's that. And then the other thing is, literally everybody is white, and they spend so much time depicting the life of white trash, or people who they consider to be white trash and hicks and hillbillies and all that stuff. They are painstaking. There's this whole, before I got sidetracked, what I was going to say is, when Jason Bateman moves his family to the Ozarks, of course it doesn't go down like he wants it to. Of course, they run into this, at a certain point, they run into this, not cartel, but definitely an organized crime faction in the Ozarks, that is essentially a hillbilly family who has deep roots in the community and is set on keeping it that way. And they're disguising themselves as farmers, honey farmers, and I think some other type of farmers, but they're really growing poppy plants in this thickly forested area, and they're distributing heroin. That's what they do. And the topography of Missouri is such that there are whole areas that you could get lost and grow whatever. It's not quite like West Virginia, if you're not from these states, or if you're just not familiar with the landscape of rural areas in the sort of Midwest to the East. You can get lost in West Virginia and Virginia, because there's so many deep valleys, or hollers as they call them, or, you know, high cliff mountains. So you can, like, there are whole shows on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel where there's this one show that's all about trying to bust people for growing weed, growing crops of weed in these deep valleys, because it's too easy to do, because nobody climbs up these mountains. Like, who's coming to these mountains to try to find all this? It's real hard, because there's not a lot of access, limited access to a lot of forested areas. It's limited access. So unless you're flying over, which in West Virginia they do, flying over and trying to survey the place, the police fly over and look at these lands just to make sure nobody's doing anything illegal, like growing marijuana or whatever. Unless you're doing that, you're not going to catch these people. And so the same is true in many spaces in Missouri, that there's just so much land at certain points that you can kind of do whatever on pieces of land and essentially be untouched. Now, what we know is that this country criminal faction in the Ozark, they kind of have something on the police, specifically the police chief of the area. And so there's a reason why they're allowed to do what they do, right? It's not that they're just hidden, but it's hidden and it's protected too. You get the sense that there's some sort of agreement, because that country criminal corporation, I'm gonna do that. That somehow or another they protected, or at the very least backed, the current sheriff of the area, of that county, to put him in office, right? And so, yeah. So anyway, so there's that whole story, and they go to painstaking detail to describe this one particular family, which, again, I told you, everybody in the show does not look their best. There's this one teenage girl who is a part of this hillbilly rednecky. Again, it's meant to be hillbilly. You get the sense that the show wants you to think that they are the countryest of country, redneck of redneck, hillbilly of hillbillies. But sort of progressive in thought, because there's a whole storyline where one of them is gay. And anyway, okay, girl, I really didn't give a crap about that storyline. It just seemed like something they were trying to do. But it felt forced to me. So I was like, okay, girl, well, cool. Anyway, but they make them seem like rednecks, but not like the worst stereotypes of all of them, just trashy, right? But there's this one girl who, her skin looks really great too. She's super pale, and her curls are popping. She's got blonde hair, and the way that they've set her up, like, she looks, they dress her up trashy. They make her kind of act what they consider to be trashy. But like, her skin is flawless. So there's two people in this whole show whose skin looks great. Even the kids of Jason Bateman's character and Laura Linney's character. This show, like, they really don't want too many people to look attractive in this show. I think it's clear. They don't want anybody to look good in this show, at least for my eyes. Yuck. Anyway, because again, change that lighting. Ooh. Anyway, so yeah, there's two people that look cute. Everybody else, oof. Anyhow, So they go through a lot. They spend a lot of time putting a lot of detail in what it's like to live in an area, like what the sentiment would be to live in an area that's essentially a ghost town outside of peak summer holiday hours, right? Summer day, holiday period, right? So, yeah, they go through a lot of that. So I appreciate all of the work that they put into these stories, right? The thing about it is, I grew up in Missouri and went to I call it the Ozarks because that's just what we call it. I know it's Ozark, Missouri. Ozark, Missouri is a place, but we call it the Ozarks because it's the Ozarks Mountains, right? Hold on, let me Google this. That's what I remember growing up, that it was the Ozarks Mountains. Ozark Mountains. Yes, thank you. I'm not ridiculous. Anyways, the Ozark Mountains. And so we call it the Ozarks, even though there's a town called the Ozark, Missouri. We called it the Ozarks for the Ozark mountain chain, right? And mountains is a generous term. They're not really, it's like, hold on, let me just go on in here. So yeah, they're mountain chains, and they extend, according to Wikipedia, they extend from Arkansas. So they start in Missouri, go through Arkansas, Oklahoma, and there are parts of southeastern Kansas. And so looking on a map, you pull that up. First off, all those states are like right there together, right? And so, yeah, so, but again, mountains is a little bit generous. They're definitely, it's like baby mountains. Like, the elevation is not super high. It's like 2,000, according to Wikipedia, the elevation there is 2,561 feet, which is not super high at all, especially here in Maryland, where we have peaks higher than that. But anyway, it still makes for beautiful scenery, beautiful resorts, beautiful place, a wonderful place to escape to if you want to get out of Big Bad Kansas City, Big Bad St. Louis, right? And you just want to enjoy and experience the land, and not even the land. If you just want to go and get on the lake, it's called Lake of the Ozarks. I think the lake is called Lake of the Ozarks. Anyway, you know how you grow up learning stuff and you just are told something and you just assume that that's what it is. But it's actually not that. I'm pretty sure it is the Lake of the Ozarks. Anyway, I'm pretty sure the name of it is Lake of the Ozarks, which is the shoreline that they're talking about in the show. It's the Lake of the Ozarks is what it's called. And so anyway, everybody would go down to the Ozarks. Everybody go down to the lake. When they said the lake, it was the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri. And so my parents own land down there. I don't think they still do, but like everybody else who lived in Kansas City, they bought land there. I ain't put not a quarter into it. They bought land down there so that we can go, and we had a boat. I think Daddy still has a boat. Not a boat girl, but like a small fishing boat. Not with a one of those like old green or silver boats that the little baby ones that has the engine on the back that once you turn it on, the front end lifts up a little higher if you're going real fast. Like one of those boats, not like a power boat or a speed boat or nothing like that. Nothing like that. Anyway, so, you know, we go down there and fish. You go down there for the 4th and see the fireworks on Lake Ozarks and all of that stuff. And you know what? You know, the surprise of it all is we were not the only Black family that would go down to the Ozarks. We were not the only Black family that owned land down in the Ozarks. And also, like, I'm quite sure that there are Black people that live down there, but like, I don't know, because we didn't. And I just went down, had fun with my siblings, and called it the doggone day when we went back. I loved going down to the Ozarks when I was little. Anyway, I guess, so the reality of it is, the town of Ozarks, let's be clear, Missouri itself is predominantly the demographics of the state itself is predominantly white, right? Obviously, when you talk about St. Louis, you talk about Kansas City, of course, you're going to get more Black folk, more Latinx folk, more folk in the Asian diaspora. You're going to get more, excuse me, I can't even believe I said this last, but you're definitely going to get, especially in Kansas City, you're going to get more indigenous people, right? But, well, you have indigenous people in St. Louis too, but you definitely have more indigenous folks in Kansas City and in and around the greater Kansas City area. And I'm talking about Kansas City, Missouri, not necessarily Kansas City, Kansas, which Google that. Kansas City is split mostly on the Missouri side, but it does have land on the Kansas side. Anyway, or maybe that's in reverse. Maybe there are more indigenous people on the Kansas side of Kansas City than on the Missouri side. But my point is, although the entire state as a whole has more white people in it than as a whole, there's still a good majority of people of color. And especially when you talk about resort towns and stuff, like, don't be weird. Like, all of these little resort towns are not exclusively white people. Like, give me a break. And so in the show, you literally see the only brown people you do see are connected to the cartel, so they don't live there, right? The only brown people that you do see don't live in the Ozarks. They don't live there. They're not from there. What they make you think is that the Ozarks is a completely white town, and the only brown people that come there come from out of town, right? And again, what I said, the only brown people in the show are either incompetent in that the guy with the beautiful skin who's the agent, but he's apparently washed, and then the cartel people, right? That's what the show depicts. And I'm just like, I can tell what your writer's room looked like, and there was nary a person of color in there. And if they were a person of color, I do not think you either listened to them, or I think they did not have a strong opinion or a strong point of view as it relates to their culture. Because it is super clear to me that the writers wanted to really depict trashy white, what they consider to be white trash life. And again, what I'm saying this because even in the depiction of what they consider to be white trash, like, it sounds like all the cliches they ever heard about people who were country and poor, all the cliches they ever heard, except for the whole sexually weird stuff. Like, outside of that, they want us to throw it all in that. And while in country, you do have country people that live in trailers. You do have country people who are into crime. But the way they depict this show, depict the characters, the country characters in this show is a little much for me. And even throughout the series, throughout the whole damn season, Laura Linney and Jason Bateman spend their time with their nose up in the air because they're from Chicago. Also, can I tell you, P.S., I meant to say this in the beginning, Chicago is a pretty diverse city. All urban cities in the United States are very diverse, right? You mean to tell me you couldn't find hardly no people of color in Chicago? Chicago. It was one of the destinations for the Great Migration. Again, I did an episode on the Great Migration, but Black people were going to Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis in droves in the early 1900s to get out of the South. You mean to tell me you could not find more than one person from the Chicago area? You only found that Asian. Like, give me a break. Like, honestly, like, it's like they only had white people. I'm dead serious. It feels like they only had white people in the writer's room. They only had a white person who was the casting director. And so the writers wrote for white characters, and the casting director said, let me go get a bunch of white people, except for these brown people who really got to play it up. Do you know what I mean? Like, I appreciate the actors, the brown actors who are in it. Like, do your thing. But, like, it's disappointing that you are literally in culturally diverse Chicago, and you mean to tell me you got only one brown person from Chicago, and then the other brown people are from Mexico. That whole country. They're not from a specific place in Mexico. They're from the entire country of Mexico, and they're the Mexican cartel, as if there's just one. And so anyway, it's just blows my mind. And then again, going back to the Ozarks, and again, I'm certainly not defending racist white culture or aspects of racist white culture in any way, but what I am saying is you literally took every stereotype that you could think of country people. And again, I think in the writer's room, I don't think they had anybody who grew up in the country in the Ozarks, or spent any significant time in Missouri in the Ozarks. Maybe they consulted with people when they got, after they knew that they were going to do the show in that town, after they knew, you know, what the premise of the whole thing was going to be. I think they consulted with a few people that they handpicked. But I do not think that in the decision making, they had anybody that was connected to the area at all. And it shows, because it's just kind of sorry, these depictions of these country people. And I won't give country people too much. Because again, part of my frustration growing up is that I was always othered, or I was like the exceptional Negro in my little country town that I grew up in. When they moved me there, well, anyway, the little country town that I grew up in. So I'm not gonna give some country people too much. I know that not all country people are super racist and weird, but that's a part of this thing. So there's an aspect of some of the mentality that they're portraying in some of these characters that is true, that feels genuine, but there's still others that it's just like weird. They spend a lot of time making the country, the country crime corporation. Oh yeah. The country crime corporation that, that Jason Bateman and Laura Linney run up against. They spend a lot of time making the wife, it's essentially headed by a husband and wife duo, right? They spend a lot of time making the wife seem like she's unhinged and super weird, and instead of being smart and calculating, like, they make her seem like she's uber superstitious and should probably be on some medication. And I thought that did a just disservice to the character. I don't think it was the actress. I definitely think it was the writing. Again, just to make her seem kooky. And again, these kooky country people doing weird stuff because they're country and they don't know any better. And I just think there's a lot that I could, that I had to suck my teeth at, or I was rolling my eyes at, because I was just like, y'all do the most. But nevertheless, there was still a lot to enjoy in the story, because the writing that was good was really good. And again, the action was good. These stories, man, they had the season ends on a cliffhanger and you're like, oh my gosh, like, you did all of this. And you can hear it and you can see it in Jason Bateman's acting. Jason Bateman is a good actor. He really is a good actor. Outside of comedy, he's a good actor, because throughout this whole thing, even with my quibbles, even with my frustration about the show and its depiction of the lack thereof of people of color, or just the way that they portrayed some of these country characters, his acting is really good. And I think it's because he directed it. I'm quite sure he had a hand in the writing in some aspect, especially for his character. So he did his thing in his acting, because it's like, how can I explain it? He's an accountant, but he's not a pipsqueak. Not that I'm saying accountants are punks, but what I am saying is that in most movies and series, accountants tend to be depicted as punks who only push pencils. They're not capable of doing anything else. And in fact, they're expendable. And so, you know, it's nothing for the bad guy to kill the accountant and get another one, right? But he seems like he's holding on by a thread, and it's like calamity after calamity. He's like, well, I'll make it work. Well, I'll make it work, because what else am I going to do? I don't want to die. I don't want my family to die. So this is what we're doing. So yeah, it's just punch after punch. He keeps rolling with it. And the emotion and expressions that he goes through, it's like he looks gaunt. And I don't know if they did this on purpose. I feel like they did it on purpose. I feel like Jason Bateman, the actor himself, did it on purpose, where he looks gaunt. Like, this stress is making him look, his cheeks look hollow and sunken in. And again, I think that's also part of the lighting, because again, nobody looks great. You see all the wrinkles, honey. You see all the ridges on your face, on the forehead. But he particularly looks not healthy, because I think he lost weight. And there's some witchery with makeup and stuff like that. Some witchcraft with you know what I mean, with the makeup and stuff to make him look even more sickly. But he looks like the stress that he's going through in this show. And rightly so. Can you imagine your best friend being killed right in front of you? And then at the threat of more murder and mayhem and violence, you move to this area that you were talking outside of your neck, saying that you had plans to make work, move your money scheme there. And then you go there and you come up with all these other calamities. And it's just one thing after another. And oh, by the way, you still don't know what the hell you're going to do about the fact that your wife had been cheating on you for a minute. Right? And then your kids, who are teen, one of which is a preteen, well, no, maybe they're both teenagers. One is older than the other, and they're mad at you and they're fussing with you. And, you know, you're just trying to keep your head on straight, but it's got to be on a swivel at the same time to make sure that you know what's going on. And do you tell them too much? Do you tell them too little? Because they're grown enough to know, not grown enough, they're old enough to know what's what. Talking about the kids. And you can't trust your wife anymore in love, but like, you got to trust her to protect these kids and to keep the family safe. So what do you do? What do you do? So like, he's under an immense amount of pressure. And if there was a best written character in this whole show that I could name, it would be Jason Bateman's. And again, he does a really great job. He's well acted. And I don't know if he got an award for this, but if he didn't, he should have. Because it was essentially set up. It seems like it was set up to be a vehicle for him to get an award. But then Laura Linney, veteran actress that she is, she's not a slouch either. Like, certainly there are these moments where she tries to do this thing with her face where she shows vulnerability. I'm like, okay, girl, can we not? Because you guys are not portraying her in the best light. Like, again, you literally can see all the wrinkles, and I really don't appreciate it, because I don't know what this is supposed to mean. Do you know what I mean? Like, they make her look pasty and pale. And I took offense to it. Honestly, I did. I took offense to the way that they made Laura Linney look. And I don't know, maybe I just need to get over it. Maybe I need to be okay. Maybe I'm being ageist myself. But I don't like the fact that I could see her wrinkles. Like, why did they do her like that? But then again, maybe they wanted to portray reality. And again, you saw every crease and crevice of Jason Bateman's face on purpose. So maybe they accentuated her wrinkles and lines on purpose to make them seem like they are people under stress, like their characters are. And so anyway, but even though this, what I was really trying to say is, even though this is clearly a vehicle, it appears clearly to be a vehicle for Jason Bateman. He certainly directed many episodes, executive produced the whole daggone thing. She gets hers off though. Let's be clear. She gets hers off. There are whole periods where there are some monologues where I'm just like, okay, girl, you seem real desperate and seem real detached from reality. There's a whole confrontation scene where she finds, long story short, Jason Bateman had a detective videotape. I think I mentioned this, videotape her in the act of cheating on him with another man. And she finds the video and finds out that when they're in the Ozarks, she finds the video on his laptop and finds that he's been watching the thing over and over and over again. She tries to confront him, but it's like weak. And I didn't understand what that whole thing was about. Like, I didn't understand what the confrontation was about. So that was trash. And there was the other couple of scenes where they try to make her seem like she's high and mighty, being high and mighty, but she's dead wrong. And I was just like, that ain't the hill you want to die on, honey. Go do something else. And then there are other scenes where she really shines through, like when she is hustling people to get a house, hustling people to get a job. She's jockeying for positioning for her family in the town, like, she's hustling, and I like that. I like the energy that she brings to those moments because it's really cool. And it seems like a woman who, in real life, she's like, I might be trash, but you know what? I'm going to do my part to make sure that my family is straight. And so I'm going to get this money. I'm going to get this opportunity for my family, and we're not going to. I'm just going to do what I have to do here. And that hustler mentality that I see in her in some of those scenes, like, you can't deny she's a good actress. I was about to say bad actress, but bad in the sense that she's good. That's how we say it. We say if in my family, and a lot of Black families, especially in the Midwest, but a lot of Black families, if you say that thing is that, ooh, that's bad. If we say it like that, that means it's good. Anyway, so like she's bad. You can tell, like you can't hide her. She's a bad actress. That's a bad girl. She's a bad girl actress, and you can't hide that. And so even though this is a vehicle for Jason Bateman, like, you can't hide good acting. When it's good, it's good. And so what I do like about season two is that we get to see more of her. We get to see more of her good acting. Like, doing her good stuff, her very best good act. Well, maybe it's not her very best, but like, she's on one. She's doing well. And I like that because I wanted to see more of her not being a creep, because it started out with her being a creep, right? Like, that was, I don't even know why that was there except to just add more drama and conflict in the show. But like, how much conflict did you need? You needed to have two people who were warring with each other but needed to work together in order to save their lives. Like, that seems overly dramatic to me, but nevertheless, that's the story that was written. And Laura Linney did her thing with what she was given. Yeah. So I really do enjoy the story because it's a good one and it seems plausible. It's just, it's clear they don't have too many people who are really connected with the area, still connected with the area in the writer's room. That's clear. And maybe they clear it up in season 2, season 3, because I do know that there's a Black woman in the cast. For a season, I can't remember what season it is, but so maybe they clean it up. But season 1 did not do well in the diversity department or the reality department for me, because how you gonna be in Chicago and not see but so many brown characters? That makes no sense. Leave it to white only cast, or not white only cast, but if you Google the cast, it's very pale. Pale looking, lacking melanin. But the writer's room, it's leave it to a predominantly white or majority white or only white casting or writer's room to depict scenes in Chicago and like have one black person in it, or only the only other brown people in it aren't even from Chicago. Like, there's a whole Chicana community that's in Chicago. Like, what? Like, not even in business. That can't even be behind the receptionist desk, huh? Can't, like, come on. Like, you sound like you've never been there before in the shows. Or unless you were only there with your college buddies and you only hung out with the few white people that you knew that were from Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, wow. They were. I hope they cleaned it up in season 2 and season 3. Because, oof. Season 1, they did not do a great job. But the show is good anyway. And so I encourage you to watch the thing anyway because it's really good. And like I said, I have hopes of season 2 and season 3 being much different in terms of diversity. I also expect the writing to be better. Especially, I expect the characters to be more developed and more real and not depictions of what they think hillbilly country people are. Or one person's point of view from when they were 10. Anyway, yeah, so I think you should watch it if you haven't already. And yeah, so I am, like I said, I'm watching season 2 right now. I'm only on episode 2 of season 2, but I am excited. Anyway, all right, that is that for today. I've talked long enough. Thank you so much for listening to me ramble on and on and on and on. I hope it was entertaining for you or got you through whatever, activity you were doing. If you would be so kind, please share this episode with someone that you think would enjoy it, or you can go back and share any of the episodes that I've hinted to today that I've done. The Great Migration episode, I think it was Out of Africa, Monroe, Louisiana. I think that one is the one where I talk about the Great Migration. Can't remember. And then, yeah, just go through it and you know, share with your friend group, family group, whatever, what you think would be of interest to them, and y'all can talk about it. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to click the link in the show description. Or the show notes to leave me a message. You don't have to download a thing in the world. It just takes you to a link. You can leave me a message and I will answer it. Also, while you're there, if you wanted to donate, even 99 cents would be a helpful contribution to helping this show and keep this little thing, this little hobby that I do going. But if that's not your thing, just again, share and share alike to your friend group. Also, ratings. Rating is really, really important. If you find that this show is interesting to you, if you find that you get enjoyment out of it, even if it's just something that you have on while you're doing your task, write that in the nicest way possible and leave me 5 stars. Again, that's how you're going to help raise the visibility of this thing that I do, this little hobby that I do. And I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. I know I'm getting some traction on different mediums. I've always gotten traction on Spotify, but I'm getting more of it now. I've always gotten traction on CastBox, but I'm getting more of it now. Pocket Cast, getting more of it. So I'm inching up. I'm getting more of it. Obviously, my bread and butter still is Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Anchor, of course, but more so Apple and Google are my bread and butter. But then Pocket Cast, you coming right on up there. And CastBox, you coming right on up. So keep listening, keep sharing, keep encouraging people to leave favorable reviews. Because again, that would be helpful. But whatever, do your best. I appreciate you. Whatever you do, I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Until next time.